Hello and welcome to the Albion Roar as we rush headlong into 2015 on the good ship Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, and of course on our podcast. I'm Aidy Packham and this show comes in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, firstly, Happy New Year everyone, and not an awful lot's happened since we were last on the air. Well, apart from Sammy resigning. We won our first game since the beginning of November. Oh, and we appointed a new manager. So not an awful lot to talk about. But the 4 points we did gain under a Nathan Jones stewardship has lifted us out of the bottom three going into New Year. But the new boss, Chris Hughton's first task is to negotiate a tricky FA Cup tie at Brentford. Joining me today as we ponder what this year has in store for us is a lady who wonders, just what would Diana do? We welcome back Vicky Lank. And yeah, in the naughty corner over there, as usual, is Alan Wares.
I am Diana.
He is. You look like Diana.
I do.
You have the same beard as her and everything.
I am. I'm the princess of all your livers.
And there's not an awful lot we can actually say to that, really.
Please don't.
But okay, well, there's
Happy New Year to you too, Aidy, by the way.
Thank you very much. And to you, Vicky.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Do come again. Well, there's not an awful lot to talk about, is there, really?
Where should we start? Well,
there's only one place to start.
Well, we did cover the Sammy's resignation in the show just before Christmas. So those who did miss it, Nick Szczepanik came in and had a good old offload about how he felt Sammy's tenure was.
Well, I'm taking the full credit for this one because actually you were with me in Chester when Sammy was appointed, and I hadn't been up there for quite a while, but I was actually up there for the first time since he was appointed.
So his tenure actually bookended your visits to Chester.
That's it.
Okay, so, well, don't rush back too quickly if you can help it. Because I'm actually, to be fair, we'll talk about Nathan Jones presently, but I'm very happy with the appointment of Chris Hughton.
Well, that was my first question, actually. Firstly, are you happy with,
yes,
with
I am.
The appointment? Vicky?
Vicky?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think it's the sort of appointment that people think, you know, it's not the exciting one, it's not the inspirational one. But that said, perhaps the position we're in, it's not one where you're looking for someone to take the sort of wild ideas, not someone, you know, someone's thinking outside the box, I suppose. He's seen as a safe pair of hands. Ultimately, the ambition for us, as it stands at the moment, is get us out of this position we're in, and then we'll worry about anything else next season.
Well, he does have a good pedigree at this level.
Well, this is the point. I think this is what the club has now come to realise. I mean, when this is the current administration's first time in the Championship, and so they've had to sort of, you know, learn things as they've gone. Tony Bloom's previous three appointments have all been first-time managers in this country. So all a little bit of a risk. But Chris comes with, like I say, as you say, with a decent pedigree. He's got a couple of teams up from this division, or very close to the top anyway. It's safety. I mean, bearing in mind that the position that we're in, then we're not in a position to muck about anymore. Yeah. But having said that, it's not a fella who's there just to get us out of relegation, the likes of a Tony Pulis could do if we were in the Premier League. This is a fella who, you know, he's going to need to be sticking around in order for us to move on to the next phase.
Well, Vicky, one thing that we didn't talk about, obviously you listened to the show which Al did with Nick, but one thing that happened after that and before this show was the departure of David Burke as well. Now, that's it's a new broom coming through, isn't it?
I thought you weren't going to mention David Burke. I actually thought you'd forgotten about him. But I think potentially that's a bigger step still, because it sort of gave the impression that that perhaps they were putting the framework in place for another manager to come in. I think, for example, when they were thinking about Tony Pulis, and I believe that they're supposed to have spoken to Tony Pulis at the very least about the job, I think there are certainly a fair few managers around who wouldn't have come into the club or wouldn't have considered the club with the structure as it was. I mean, from what I understand, you know, David Burke has gone away with some credit for some of the work he's done at the club, but I think you have to look at the transfers,
stuff, isn't it, really?
Yeah. And I think you have to look at the transfers, and that's definitely an account in the negative, isn't it? Really, it's not.
Certainly for the summer of 2014. I mean, the recruitment was pretty catastrophic. It wasn't, you know, it's actually very tricky in the short term to actually replace the quality that we've had, and we've talked about this many a time over the odd sort of drink here and there, you know, the quality that's gone from the club in the past 18 months and what's come in return just hasn't been there to replace what we've needed. So,
well, is the calibre of players that we actually could have retained as well?
There's that as well. So without knowing all the intimate details of exactly what's gone on behind the scenes, it's easy to point the finger at David Burke. And the point is, we just don't know the exact things. We could actually sit here and scream and shout, and you don't know what you're doing. But the point is, he was there at the beginning signing. It's not just about player recruitment. He was there to do their insurance, their medical stuff, their accommodation, their stuff that they need to come in and settle down and sort the team, the individual players as they come in. He's also there to set up the academy. And there is an argument to say that maybe in doing such a big, huge job there, he maybe took his eye off the ball regarding recruitment.
I think nobody is ever going to have a 100% strike rate, are they? When it comes to signing players, you're going to have those that are going to have a few hits. You're going to have probably as many misses. But it feels like the players that we've signed in the last year or so, broadly speaking, have been misses. You've had players like Ajoa that have come in. Clearly, someone spotted them.
Well, let's not forget that it was actually Gus Poyet that signed Ryan Harley, for instance.
Yeah, absolutely. and they can all do that. Every manager makes bad signings. You know, some of them will get the reputation of being very good at spotting
has
a player.
Well, Fergie's as good as it gets.
Yeah, but he's, you know, Fergie's picked up players like Bebe, and if you go much further back, he always used to say that the signing of Ralph Milne was the one that everyone used to hold up against him, if you can remember back that far out.
I really don't, I'll tell you.
But I think the thing for me is, if you have the director of football role, that kind of says to me that this is the all-encompassing guy. He's the one that knows about the ethos of the club and the way that the teams play, and therefore you can bring a new manager in who may not necessarily know about everything about the club and about the way that, you know, everything is structured and the players are coached. He might not know that players are going to fit. They're going to fit the bill. So that's what I kind of feel like the director of football is supposed to do. And yet it feels like a lot of the players have signed just haven't fitted the structure at all. They haven't fitted into the way the team plays or anything like that. And that's the disappointment, isn't it?
But the interesting point is, I mean, Paul Winstanley was brought in a few weeks ago, but he also, it's interesting that David Burke has gone now that Sammy has gone. I mean, if the club was going to be worried about being that proactive because David Burke was part of the problem, an intrinsic part of the problem.
Well, we discussed this, didn't we? I mean, we said that we needed to look at the whole structure. It wasn't just Sammy that was the problem. It was the whole structure
and the way
it works in this country.
But what I mean is if the club identified the fact that David Burke was a problem, as a negative person around the place, then why didn't the club act sooner? It's only the club's only acted now that Sammy has gone. That's not to say that, you know, Paul Winstanley would actually then come in and do exactly the same job as David Burke. Tony Bloom has since said, no, he's not going to. They're actually going to sit down and thrash out what they need for the January window because they've got to act very, very quickly now rather than going through the mountains of databases that they already have. So it's a kind of a funny one that departure and the acceptance of the resignation of Sammy Hupia has triggered other things within the club. As much as David is being blamed for a pretty awful summer of recruitment, I think at the same time you've also got to say, you know, a brilliant job that he did in getting the academy up to the level and the status that it has been.
Okay, we're talking about people that have done brilliant jobs. We've got to talk about Nathan Jones, haven't we? Well, I couldn't make the Reading game for family reasons, but you guys were both there. I mean, apart from the first 20 minutes,
apart from the first 20 seconds, really, it was pretty catastrophic. The point about Nathan Jones and him starting and people's attitude was that he was also perceived to be part of the same problem. That you've got this triumvirate of evil of Sammy Hupia, Nathan Jones and David Burke, and therefore Jones was part of the problem too. You give him two games in charge, and how many people have actually done a complete 180 on their opinion of him? I mean, there's a lot of people that just didn't know what it was he did, so therefore were prepared to give him a fair crack of the whip. But, you know, in those two games, he has shown with the same people sort of things that Sammy just couldn't do in the previous 20 games.
Yeah, he just galvanised the team, Vicky.
I think so, potentially. I mean, the thing is, I think I see that Nathan Jones, you know, if you read a lot of the social media surrounding the Albion, Nathan Jones has had a lot of stick over the last probably couple of years.
I think
I've seen a lot of people asking, what does he do?
Exactly.
Or he doesn't. I see him standing there and he's not doing anything. Well, actually, perhaps he is doing. I've never actually criticised him myself purely because I don't feel informed enough to know what his role is. I have no idea what goes on in the dressing room. And for all I know, the players may well have liked him very much.
That's a natural human reaction to something you don't understand or know, isn't it? So, I mean,
that's a politics of fear, isn't it? I mean, Dean White had to put up with this. Bob Booker did to a certain extent. Oh, what do they do? They just stand there being part of the furniture. And it's not like that at all. So then an argument then comes around. If Nathan Jones is that passionate as the interim manager, why why wasn't he like that when he was, you know, number two to Sammy? And you think that's the point. He's the number two. What Sammy says in the dugout and in the dressing room, what have you, goes. What the manager says goes. Maybe, you know, Nathan might have to be sort of shackled again when he's on the touchline now that he's, you know, for the time being, certainly Chris Hughton's number two. When I say the time being, Chris has still got to actually bring in his own people.
Yeah, I think Paul Trollope's coming in.
Right, well, it's a name that's been put out there, but, you know, that'll be confirmed in...
Is it Colin Calderwood who is usually number two?
They'll sort it. We'll probably be able to discuss it this time
the
next
Spurs
week.
Connection.
That yeah. kind of thing. But, no, so when the team started against Reading, you thought, same old, same old. You know, it's same squad, different manager, not a great deal has changed.
Well, I went into that game on Boxing Day and I think I felt like I didn't feel particularly optimistic for the game. I didn't go into it expecting that suddenly the team was going to start playing better because of Sammy Hippier, because he'd gone. But what I did feel was that the atmosphere that had surrounded the previous few home games that had suddenly lifted. It was like a cloud had lifted from around the club. And because, people were going into those games and it was just the first sign of failure, the first misplaced pass, the first goal conceded. And it was, the atmosphere was poisonous. I missed a Millwall game, but I understand that, you know, it went horribly.
Oh, you missed a doozy there.
And I understand that, you know. That
I'd like to prefer to call it
people
a snoozy.
They have said to me, you know, the atmosphere was poisonous. It was a horrible place to be.
It was as poisonous as it's ever been at the Amex. I mean, the Goldston, the last days of the Goldston was worse. But yes,
the difference with the Boxing Day game, I think nobody went into that game thinking, oh, well, everything's going to be fine now because Sammy Hippier's gone. People, you know, still expected it, and as it panned out, you know, that the defence would still make mistakes and you know, that the team would show as much incompetence in places as they had been.
Well, that first goal, I mean, where were the defence? I mean, it was a comedy of errors, really, wasn't it?
It was actually pathetic.
But it had to be Glenn Murray as well.
Well, there is that, but I mean, the interesting point, just picking up on your point about sort of people slightly lifted and sort of a little bit more optimistic, I'd actually say there was probably more people there than I was expecting to be there. I mean, if Sammy had still been in charge, that stadium would have been half full / half empty. That, you know, there was a lot more people. The official attendance, you know, which is a farcical number that comes out, I'd suggest there was probably about 19,000 there, although the official attendance.
I mean, there's a lot of people, because of this transport arrangements, a lot of people struggle with that day. I know so many people that couldn't make that game because of
if you're
whatever,
in West Sussex, you were screwed. But I came down from East Croydon. I was with some family in London. But I came down on the train. But the shuttle train from Brighton to Falmouth, which was every 10 minutes, worked like an absolute dream. I wish it was like it every
you
time.
You just had to get to Brighton. That was the problem.
Basically, yeah. But no, it was great. So, yeah, first couple of minutes, absolute gibberish. Started playing the ball a little bit during the first half, but really didn't create anything. And then the second goal, bit of a sucker punch. And you think...
Oh, Glenn Murray again.
But the difference was the crowd never got on their back, happened.
You say that. Actually, very near me, I did hear people... And it's people who would boo Ashley Barnes for missing a hard chance, but they were actually screaming, resign, Jones, resign, leave the club.
But I didn't feel that the whole place had turned, which was what you were
not
getting
in the
at
same
previous
way
that
it would have been if it was Sammy,
you know, they
yes.
were just waiting for the first thing to go wrong and waiting to launch into it, whoever happened to be in charge at the time. I felt that there was... You know, the majority of people were in a more forgiving mood. Yes. I don't know. Perhaps it was just Christmas. Perhaps it was the beer. I don't know. But
they did get, in my neck of the woods, they gave him at least 25 minutes before they got on his back. Yeah. So,
well, let's just quickly talk about Glenn Murray then. I mean, obviously comes back and scores twice against us. He's quite good at that. I mean,
doesn't celebrate.
Quick straw poll though. Would you have him back?
Of course, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's the person we desperately need.
Like a shot. I still don't think it will happen, but I'd have him like a shot, yeah.
Definitely.
Well, his loan is now finished, so he goes back to Palace now. So.
Yes, he does.
But then they've got a new manager. You have to wonder whether the new manager will give him, at least want to have a look at him as a player, whereas the previous last couple of managers at Palace haven't wanted to look at him.
Okay, well, one thing that was a revelation against Reading was Nathan Jones unleashing the Halford Exocet.
Is that what you call it?
That's what I've got written down here.
You were going to say Nathan Jones' shoes, but you missed them.
I'm sure that we could actually come up with something. But actually, if you're listening, folks, come up with something better. Surely some reference to Halford's parts or something like that, or Halford's motors or something like that. But Halford's Exocet, but it's a good one, isn't it? And as much as we weren't expecting it, I don't think Norwell Reading, because, there was two long throws that towards the end of the first half. First one resulted in a goal, which they were all screaming about for offside, which is the most pathetic claim going. And the second one, Kulunga very unluckily hit the post straight from it. So it's about as, in bearing in mind the football that we've had over the past 5 years, it's about as anti-Brighton as you could hope for as a big sort of booming long throw. But, you know, in our position, hey, if it's resulting in what it is, then I'll take it.
Although oddly, we barely used it against Fulham.
Did we not?
We'll get on to Fulham, but it was hardly used at all. So.
Sure.
Well, I mean, it's there as a tool. I mean, it was simple, wasn't it? Long throw, tap, flick on, and tap home.
The pity is that it's actually a very tall fella who's actually throwing it, you know, as opposed to, you know, being waiting to receive it. So, okay. Dunk's the obvious target. Maybe Ince might be, but, you know, Halford isn't. So, yeah,
well, Halford is now, it's confirmed that he is now back for the season.
It is.
That's very good.
Well, it's immediately an emergency loan because the window isn't open. Well, when you hear this show, folks, the window will be open, but when we're recording this, the window's not open. So it's an emergency loan for now, and then I think, as I understand, we've got him for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and he's out of contract at the end of the season with Forest anyway. So.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is I don't think the Forest fans rate him, so maybe it's because he's that utility player that when he's been playing up front, he's come across as a bit of a donkey, but actually he's actually very composed next to Lewis Dunk, I think.
I'd need to double check, but we are his 11th or 12th club. So, I mean, that tells you all you need to know, really.
Well, perhaps he just likes
it.
And
he's come across as one of these, for most of his career, in fact, he's come across as the classic jack of all trades, master of none. Mm. He signs for another club. Nobody ever gets excited about him signing for their club. But actually, I've been pleasantly surprised, especially since he's been playing centre-half, and he's been excellent.
Well, he's been an old head in there, which is what we've needed.
There's that as well.
Well, Gordon Greer's an old head, but I wouldn't necessarily say he's had the best of seasons.
I mean, we were having a conversation.
Old head, old legs, really.
But we were having a conversation. We are going to talk about Fulham shortly, but we were having a conversation on the train coming back, Vix, about keeping the shirt. Now, Gordon Greer's fit and available, I think, for Brentford. Does he come straight back in, or does Halford keep his place?
Personally, I hope Halford keeps his place. I think that's entirely fair. I thought he played very, very well at Fulham. There was a couple of really, really good defensive headers under pressure. The sort of one where, if you don't make that header, it's a free header on goal for the opponent. And, you know, he really stuck his head in there, won these balls, and he's had a very, very good game. So, and that's without even using the throw-ins, really. Mm. So, I personally hope he stays in.
Yeah, and also Greer's a little bit rusty. But having said that, this would be the perfect game for Gordon Greer to come back, bearing in mind that the league now is our priority. And you know, perversely, for Brentford, the cup really isn't their priority. They're doing very well, and if they have the distraction of a cup run, bearing in mind they're doing very, very well in the league at the moment, you know, that could undo them slightly. That said, they'll probably turn us over.
Their manager said he's going to be taking it seriously.
Of course.
What that means, who knows, but
that's just appealing to the home fans, as in, please, you know, don't not turn up.
But I would imagine he would change things, and I hope he would change things.
Well, there's absolutely, but it would be the perfect game for Gordon Greer to come back, because and it's actually the perfect game for Chris Hughton to start his managerial career. He's not been thrown in the deep end with a league game, and he's got an extra week to find players. So this is a kind of it's not a practice match. That's ridiculous.
But it's not
the more important. Correct. Yeah.
It's a nothing to lose game, isn't it? Mm. Nobody on paper, Brentford would be the favourites anyway because of their league position. They're the home side.
And the perfect result would be if it was a draw. Then Hughton has got another one of those games to actually sort his side out.
Okay. Well, back to the Reading game then. Second half, Nathan obviously got into their heads and we laid siege to their goal.
It was one-way traffic for most of it. That's what I remember of it. Whatever it was, we played a lot quicker and a lot more accurately.
And I think you also have to give a big round of applause to their manager for subbing Glenn Murray, because that changed the game as much as anything, because suddenly they had no outlet whatsoever up front. You know, Simon Cox did nothing. Robson Carney did nothing. Yep. They just didn't have any outlet at all after he went off.
But we had 65% of possession in that game. 15 shots, 7 of which were on target. Reading had 10 and 4 on target during the game, which tells you the story of the game, really, doesn't it?
It'd be interesting to know what the second half stats were. I mean, you've given us the 90-minute stats here, but the second half stats, I think, would be probably even more skewed. We were really good. We played well. We played with heart, with spirit, with a bit of gusto, the odd bit of flair here or there as well, but certainly with a desire to actually, this whole attitude of we're sick of losing. Mm. And it took until the 90th minute to score. Captain Calderon came in and sort of slotted home very nicely. But the interesting, another interesting thing is, and bizarre, we're talking about Halford in central defence. With about 10 minutes to go, he was placed up front.
Yeah.
Didn't do a great deal with it, admittedly, but he was placed up front. And when Calderon scored, and the announcer said, oh, there's 5 minutes injury time, Halford stayed up front. You think, slightly kamikaze, but, you know, in the end, got away with it, I think, because the momentum was with us, so we could carry on doing it. But, you know, there would be, I think, a certain argument to say, right, we've got our equaliser, Halford, get back in defence.
Okay, well, it was 2-2, and people were impressed with what Nathan had done at half-time, and people were already then talking him up for the top job.
Probably not to the same extent that they were after the Fulham game, but they certainly I think what it was appreciated a very good performance that we haven't had for, let's face it, for probably, it's probably the best at the time, the best half of the season.
Better than Cardiff?
I think I've seen a couple of slightly better away performances, certainly, and the Cardiff game we played well. I think,
yeah, okay,
I think
but
you're,
it was
you're
one
forgetting
of the best
how
ones.
Badly we played recently.
Yeah, I know that's
clutching onto anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's all right. It's one of the better ones, but you know, it's certainly up there. So.
Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, and of course on our podcast. We are brought to you in association with OldFootballShirts.com, and we do have a shirt of the week for it. He's got, well, he couldn't be bothered to write anything this week.
Well, did you make something up then?
I can do.
Show us the shirt then.
Here we go.
It's disgusting, but I'd also say
it's got to be Brentford.
It is. I think it is. It's a pale blue
KLM
shirt
on it,
but it's not dissimilar to a really horrible England shirt they used to have, a pale blue one with lots of dark blue flecks.
I remember that one. Yeah, I mean it's a Hummel shirt,
which I always associate that. Sorry, the very similar England shirt is the one I always associate us playing in when we conceded against San Marino in the first 7 seconds. Mm. It might have been. Might not worn the shirts that day, but it was certainly around that time. But all right, far away. So Phil said nothing.
Well, this is the Brent. No, he has said something. This is the Brentford away shirt from 1992 to 1993. Our new manager never played for Brentford against Brighton, but he would have turned out in this delightful number for some of his time with the B during 1992 and 1993. So that was a Chris Hughton linked shirt.
Right.
So not many people remember that he actually used to play for.
It's just wall to wall Brentford, isn't it? Haven't we got a league game coming up against them as well?
Yes, we might even. Who knows?
If,
could
if
even
we
have
draw.
A cup replay against them as well.
Yeah.
Our opponents in residence.
But I mean, that was that. Thank you for that wonderful shirt, Phil. It was lovely, and we will be available through all our usual outlets shortly. But no foreign names. Can you remember any? Are there any rubbish players with long names played for Brentford? I can't think of any.
Probably could think of the odd one here and there if I sort of bothered my ass to think about it, but. Frankly, no, I can't. I don't spend too much time thinking about Brentford.
No, I don't either.
Apart from Alan Freeman's Brentford Nylons adverts in the 1970s. Not half.
Moving on. Let's move on to Fulham then.
Well, you two better talk about
yeah,
this.
Yeah, well, Jones was forced to shuffle his pack after injury and illness robbed him of JFC, Gardner and Bent. In come Rowan Ince, CMS and João Teixeira. 3,000 people followed us up to the poshest away game of the season.
Oh, what a day it was. What a day, what a night. It was one of those away trips that I think all the people that didn't or decided not to go are regretting it now, and one of the ones that sticks in your mind for a long time afterwards.
What a night, late December 2014.
Well, you know, the daft thing is it's not even a game that it's not a game of great significance. It's not a game against your deadly rivals. It's not a relegation saver or a promotion clincher, but it was just one of those games, a lovely old ground that we haven't been to for years and years and years, a good part of the world to go and have an afternoon out in. And obviously the result, but it was just fantastic. The atmosphere was great. The team performance was excellent. Just, yeah, I'm giving it a 10 out of 10.
How much of it do you remember, Adrian?
I remember I only had one pint during the day, so I was...
Wow.
I started the morning in Chester at 5 o'clock
Such
in the morning.
Such temperance. How do you manage it?
I know. Well, because I had been...
Because you were working.
You were going to work.
Yeah, I'd been up for 19 hours.
It's a good job I won, isn't it?
Yeah.
He'd have been unbearable.
He'd have had a lot more than one pint.
Yeah.
Go on then, go to the match report then.
Well, I mean, what the hell had Jones done to the same set of players that Sammy had?
Were Fulham rubbish?
They were dangerous going forwards, I think. I mean,
the strange thing for me is I never thought they were going to score. Normally I'm the most pessimistic person.
They had chances,
when we're winning by, you know, the odd goal, I tend to be sitting there thinking, oh, you know,
it's
the equaliser's around the corner. Yeah. We're going to get put under pressure in a minute. And only really, there was a short spell in the second half when inevitably, as the home side, they came out and they attacked a bit. But at no point in that game did I ever think, yeah, we're going to concede now. I was just quite cool. That might have been the wine, actually.
Yeah,
I mean, you quite, had a nice day, didn't you?
At some point, you know, I just never felt that I couldn't see us conceding. I just thought, you know, Stockdale's playing well. I thought Lewis Dunk was playing well. Hawford was excellent. Just all of them were playing in the right place. They held their shape. They were just excellent.
We were first through every ball. We were winning the second ball. We were just immense. And Rowan Inter was a major part of that.
Yeah.
Well, this is an interesting point. You're saying that, you know, everyone played well and everyone played in their place. You can't help feeling that in the previous 20-odd games, there's just too many players have been playing out of position. It's a constant sort of moaning that we had with the likes of Mark McGee and Mickey Adams second time round. But this time round, you know, the biggest bugbear is, and I do appreciate he didn't play against Fulham, is, you know, Jake Forsakaski playing far too deep when frankly he's an attacking midfielder. But you're saying that, you know, everyone played where they should have been and played really well for it.
And they held the shape. You know, they were playing in the places where they were meant to be. They kept it together. They moved as a unit, as a team. And Fulham just couldn't really find a way past it. I mean, there was a couple of very, very good saves from Stockdale in the second half. But I think you have to expect the home side to come out and attack at some point. I don't think I realised that there was one save from a curling shot towards the top corner. Well, I don't think I realised at the time just how good that was. But
yeah,
that
was
see
a
that
fantastic
again,
one.
Excellent.
But there was the one that was really low down was probably a better save.
I thought that at the time that the low down one was the better save because he was quite close in. He hit it hard. Mm. You know, hopefully he's another player that's coming good and he's getting confident.
We're talking about players that were coming good. I mean, we had Adrian Kalunga was immense. He was lively. He was forcing the play, and he was linking everything up well with CMS.
Was he falling over easily?
No, he wasn't at all.
No, I think, I mean, him and Tejera both, you know, they were
but
the kind
Tejera
of...
But Tejera had a poor first half by his high standards, but I thought in the second half he was brilliant.
It's a lovely pass from Tejera for the goal, actually, yes. The second goal. Aided, of course, by a magnificent chest down from Chris O'Grady.
We're going to talk about him in a minute.
Okay, can I, in that case, you obviously, you two were at the game. Can I ask, we've seen what, well, we, myself and Vicky saw what the game was like at home to Reading, and obviously it was a much improved performance against Fulham. What is it that Nathan Jones, do you believe, is doing with the same set of people and frankly probably the same, you know, system? What's he doing that Sammy couldn't do? Or what was it? Was it the players not responding?
Well, David Stockdale's come out and said that Nathan had told him a few home truths before the game and he got into their heads and he galvanised them.
And which game? The Reading or the Fulham game?
Before the Fulham game.
Right.
I think.
I don't think you can always tell. I mean, it's very easy to say that they played better in that game, therefore it must be due to Nathan Jones. It could just be one of those things where, you know, they've been threatening to play well for a while.
Rewind that one.
No. Okay, but you know, just things have clicked for whatever reason. Fulham didn't play very well. The atmosphere maybe lifted the players. I'm sure Jones has done something, you know, to improve their morale and everything. But we're making that assumption. Yeah,
that's what I'm asking. What has he done? I mean, there is
that's
a clear...
the X factor, isn't it?
Okay, so
there is a dividing line.
All right, what is it you can see? As fans who've watched the game, nearly every game this season,
I think
what
the tempo on the pitch. You know, there's been a lot under recent managers, and I would probably say the same under Garcia to a degree. That it's been a lot of slow passing, and people get the ball and they haven't really looked like they're going to do anything with it. Oh, I'll just pass it backwards again. I haven't got a problem with people passing the ball backwards if we're keeping it.
It had changed the shape as well.
In what way?
For a start, I mean, Tejera was playing more tucked in the middle. Basically, you had Ince was playing the holding role very, very well. He was shielding the back four.
Did he not have Holland alongside
Holler
him then?
Yeah.
Well, Holler was playing slightly further forward.
Okay.
But it was it was more of a diamond, I think.
Right.
And CMS actually could actually control the ball for a change. That was nice.
But not all the time, but you know,
was it kind of more fluid up front then? I mean, rather than just people just standing around like trees.
I think it's always fluid when you've got CMS up front, but that may just come down to control.
I mean, the difference I noticed was the fact that it was going back to when we had Liam Bridcut playing for us, where he was winning the ball quickly, which is what Rowan Ince was doing, and feeding the ball quickly to one of the more creative players. And that's what was happening. He was winning the ball, getting his tackles in, and getting the ball to one of the creative players, and we were doing stuff.
It wasn't necessarily a major gear crunch in tactics. It was just everyone played better.
Yeah.
Right, that's what I was asking.
I mean, inside one of those games, if you remember when he first came into the team last season, I guess it would have been, and there were moments when he was going in on going in for the ball. He'd come away with it. Sometimes you didn't know how he did come away with it.
Yeah, because he's on the other side of the pitch. Yeah. How come he's got the ball?
And you couldn't quite work out how he still had the ball because he'd be stumbling through all these challenges. But this season, we haven't really had a lot of ball winning going on. There's not been anybody.
Right.
That's what we said before, that we've lacked a kind of leadership figure. And
the thing is, they were winning the ball
and
losing the ball very, very quickly. And that was, I think, what the difference was. We were retaining possession.
We haven't had that leadership figure. We've said it for a while that there's no one sort of grabbing hold of the game. I thought against Fulham, there was several occasions quite early on when Ince has got back into that groove of just going in there, getting the ball, somehow coming out with it glued to his foot. And you could almost see the rest of the players thinking, hang on a second, we're keeping the ball here, we've got it, right, I better make a move now, I better go and put myself in a position to get it. And it increased the tempo of the passing and the movement of the players. And I just, sometimes it's just that little lift, isn't it, of knowing someone's in there who's going to do the right thing with it.
But
it
and the real Elliot Bennett turned up as well.
Yeah, I mean, he had a decent game.
He wasn't man of the match, but he was the Elliot that we knew from the first.
I don't think at any stage during his spell he's been the Elliot Bennett of 2011, but there could be plenty of reasons for that, which I'm sure we haven't got time.
Well,
he's
coming back from injury, but I mean that's another story.
Sure,
so you
believe you've nailed it then in the difference between say what Sammy was doing and what Nathan's been doing is just largely the same but better. You know, there hasn't been, you know, someone a gear crunch here, or there hasn't been a, you know.
Well, Hoopier didn't appear to fancy Ince at any stage anyway, did he? He hasn't had a lot of chances. That said, none of us know why that is. It might be that he's been terrible in training. It might be that he doesn't like his personality. So we don't know what the reason for that is.
The other thing about that, the Fulham game is that we don't know whether Holler and or Ince would have been picked ahead of Gardner and or JFC if you know, the latter two hadn't been,
but
ill.
They certainly dovetail well together.
Sure. Yeah. Well, we know they can. It's just that, you know, when they can't, it's disastrous. But then by the same token, when you've got JFC and Gardner together, they're not bad, but actually, yes, they are.
Hmm. Okay, well, I mean, one of the standout moments of the game was obviously that beautiful ball from CMS where he played in Elliot, and he got completely cleaned out.
That was a hell of a wallop, wasn't it?
It was.
Vicky, you were right down by the corner flag, as I understand.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, maybe I missed that.
No, well, where were you in the Putney end?
Right in the middle, above the goal.
Right, and so you immediately thought penalty, jolly good penalty, or
there's no chance it wasn't a penalty.
I see, you're talking about our penalty. I'm with you now. Sorry. Yeah. No, that's the clear as day penalty, isn't it?
Yeah, he did clean him up. Didn't
he?
It was pretty rash
in terms of the actual move. It was similar to the penalty we won at Peterborough.
The weird thing about it is what I felt. I don't know if the pitch was hard and icy or something like that, but what I felt was that Bennett seems to take ages to get it under control. I mean, it was kind of running ahead of him and trying to control it with the strides he had. You know, it got as far as the 6-yard line nearly before he was about to pull the trigger, as opposed to the ball was kind of with him a good sort of 10 yards further back. It was like he took an extra couple of paces in order to, I don't know, for it to be ready for him to hit. I mean, it allowed the defender then to come in and wipe him out, but that's down to the defender being rubbish rather than, you know, Elliot being sort of on his game, I thought.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of penalty that I don't think even Jose Mourinho could contest, is it really?
Well, he could, but...
But Kalunga still stepped up and took it in a very similar fashion to his penalty at
Norwich. In that nerve-wracking way that I hate players taking penalties, where they step up really slowly and roll it in.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when it doesn't work, it looks shocking. Ryan Harley at Millwall.
But, I mean, the performance was good. I mean, we did make a couple of changes and a couple of substitutions, one of which was, dude looks like O'Grady.
Oh, seamless, AD. You know what, again...
Sorry, what have I missed here?
So you don't get popular music references, do you?
Anyway, Chris O'Grady. I thought, he came on and for the first time in his Albion career, he did actually have people singing his name. Now, I think that's probably more...
Without swear words, you mean?
I think it's probably more in a kind of Johnny Crumplin, football genius, slight cult hero, slightly tongue-in-cheek way. But do you know what? It doesn't matter, does it? Maybe he'll hear that. Maybe he'll pick up. He did nothing wrong when he came on. He won every header he was in for. Lovely chest down to Shearer to pass through for the second goal for Solly March.
He won you every single fault. Header he went
really?
Up for. Really? Yeah. And,
you could not fault his effort and his heading of the ball.
He was brilliant when he came on. It was absolutely brilliant.
And okay, well, stay on, but yeah.
Can I take that back then a notch then? If he was really that good, albeit only for 10 minutes, but if he was really that good, why hasn't he been so far?
Confidence.
Really? I mean, he's
okay,
the sort
and
of player.
Where's that confidence come from
I
then?
I think he's a very honest player, Chris O'Grady, and he's never going to be the world's most talented. But I just, if... You know, you never know. If someone like him could come good, that would just be brilliant. And I think he'd be very, very popular if he did.
That chance he had against Sheffield Wednesday in the first game of the season, I reckon if you put that in, we might have seen a different player.
Maybe.
But I mean, all players thrive in confidence. And from what I'm hearing, he's one of those that really thrives in confidence.
Yes.
And, you know, he wasn't getting picked. He was getting, and when he was getting on the bench, he wasn't getting on the pitch. And we don't know what Sammy was saying to him. Sammy obviously didn't fancy him. And you know, and he went into his shell, and you're not going to get the best out of a player who's
if we could get something out of him before the end of the season, and I don't know what's happening with him, I don't know, he may
Sheffield
well
United
go back
are
to Sheffield United
him, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
He may well decide he wants to go back there, and fair enough, he's got northern roots, you can't blame him, but I'd love it if he could come good and just sort of chip in with a few goals. I think he's a sort of player that would be very, very popular with supporters if he did actually come good, yeah?
Well, kind of cult hero straight away.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cult hero is that, yeah, he's the sort of player that term was made for, isn't he?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's just talk about that second goal because it was a beautiful finish.
It was very nicely tucked away. I mean, I you can't help feel it. Well, you saw it, but the way it comes across on the camera, it looks slightly scuffed, but you reckon that was sort of perfectly passed into the net rather than...
It was a clipped finish.
I thought he clipped it from my expert corner flag position.
Yes.
I thought it went exactly where he went meant to put it. He looked very, very confident.
I think so too, yeah.
And it was a beautiful ball from Tashira as well.
Absolutely. Is that Solly March's first league goal for us?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I know
he scored in the FA Cup, but he hasn't scored in the league. But it was a great finish. I mean, Solly was good when he came on as well. He looked lively.
I think we're all waiting for him to repeat that goal he scored against Norwich in pre-season friendly last season. So I think he's got it within him to do it as well. Well, we clearly see that we have. And hopefully his growing pains have finished. So, you know, great stuff. And sounds like you two had a ball on the way home as well.
Well, I wouldn't say that so much, but we got home.
Yeah, scenic ride via various stations in the end, I think.
But I mean, that was...
It's a very noisy journey home with lots of very excitable football fans.
But I mean, at the end of that game, it did also signal the end of various players' loan spells with us. So we say farewell to Gary Gardner, Elliot Bennett, Darren Bent. I did have Greg Halford on this list, but he's obviously here.
Events have overtaken you, and Darren Bent's now gone to Derby, so...
Yeah, well, we were discussing that on the train, weren't we, Vic? So, I mean, that's a good move for him.
Why wouldn't he?
No,
absolutely. I think you can't blame him for doing it. I'm not devastated by him going. It's a slight disappointment in the sense that he did get a couple of goals.
Yep.
And we're not exactly
what a goal every game.
Goals,
so.
But I think he should be replaceable. We just need that. You know, we need someone.
We need someone. I mean, Kulunga's coming good again. We need someone to play with him.
Much as everyone still, even after all this time, wills Craig McCowsmith to do well. I'm not convinced he's ever gonna hot run for us. And it's, you know,
if it hasn't happened so far. You know,
I think Baldock will come good. It's just a question of the team playing better and getting in the service and obviously getting him fit as well.
Sure. Well, throughout Baldock's career, he's always scored his goals in clumps. So he's always got like five and then not in a row and then not got any for a couple of months or something. But as long as he's contributing on the pitch, I mean, he looks. I don't know. The jury's still very much out on him.
Mm.
But we've got 4 years.
We haven't seen the best of any of our players this season so far. So, you know,
it's
not fair to judge anyone on anything, apart from maybe sort of
Gary Gardner.
But, you know,
Gardner, he weighed in with some important goals.
And he was good in bits and pieces, but just far too often he really wasn't good. When he was good, he was great-ish. But when he was bad,
he was horrid.
It was not nice at all.
But I mean, he was actually recalled by Villa. It wasn't actually just the end of his loan spell. He was actually recalled as well.
Sure, okay. So, the other thing,
astonishingly, their fans seem thrilled by that. Genuinely pleased and excited to have him back. So obviously, he has got something, or somebody somewhere has seen talent from him. We just Maybe it's just not worked out with us.
Or again, it could just be the whole nature of actually just playing under Sammy. Again, it's really not fair to judge anyone from the first 20 games this season. The other thing we have to say goodbye to is Nathan Jones's brief tenure as manager. And blimey, he seemed to sign off in style. He was roaring at the Putney end, wasn't he?
He
had a cider and a hug.
Again, you don't get that from Jose Mourinho at the end of a game, do you?
You probably get it from Mourinho. You wouldn't have got it from Hoopier.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, that passion that showed at the end of the game, and that really, really got... I mean, if fans weren't on his side anyway, after that, and the complete lack of passion shown by Hoopier, it was, you know, that was exactly what...
It goes to show Hoopier's lack of passion and also the vast fickleness of most of us, I think, who are now talking about Nathan Jones and, oh, he loves Brighton. What a character he is. He loves being here. He motivates the team. Whereas, I mean, you know, a week and a half ago...
Yeah. This whole Yeovil thing from back in the day, I mean, all right, so he did something he shouldn't have done and maybe he regrets it, but, you know, to hold that against him, especially when he's done what he's done, in other words, hopefully kick-started our season, you know, chapeau to him. And the Yeovil thing, so what?
I think more Mickey Adams than Nathan, to be honest. But,
I think there's a few people upset with him at the time, but, you know.
He was hardly Scott McLeish, was he?
Exactly.
Mm. Okay, but we do say goodbye to Nathan in that role, but he is being retained on the staff of Chris Hughton. So what can we expect from Chris Hughton?
Well, he said that he likes to play a 4-4-1-1 or a 4-2-3-1, but not quite so expansive.
Therefore, we're just
going to have to wait to see what that means, actually.
Given the lack of wingers currently, I don't think we can do expansive whether we wanted to or not.
But the interesting point is, for all those that want to play 4-4-2, they're going to be disappointed. Each of those references he made there was, you know, has a 1 at the end. He's going to be playing one striker up front. Mm. Whether it's going to be a fast little nippy fella or a bruiser of the likes of O'Grady's stature, or a big tall fella, the likes of Murray up front, or even, you know, sticking Halford up front, which I wouldn't particularly agree with. We're just going to have to wait and see. But for all the fact that Birmingham and Newcastle fans loved what he did, and Norwich fans said you're in for a snore fest, I'd like to think that we're going to go down the Birmingham-Newcastle route. Norwich were always going to be struggling, and he was actually trying to build a team that wasn't going to lose rather than one that was going to entertain.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but Norwich weren't in the relegation zone when he left, were they?
No, but they didn't like what they saw, apparently. No. So,
and then they got relegated.
Yeah, well, quite.
Elliot Bennett was there then, wasn't he?
He did mention Elliot Bennett in his first... Well, he was asked about him in his first press conference, and, you know... He said at the time he started the first game of that season and then got injured, and so he knows what Elliot Bennett can do. Sadly, I don't think he certainly didn't do it this time around.
Do you think he would bring him back though? I mean, I wouldn't be against having him back, because I mean he was slowly getting back to being the player. And, you know, the first game he looked great and he looked like he'd been playing for a Premier League side, which he had been. Mm. And then, like most players that come to us, he quickly comes down to our level. But I mean, I think that with a new manager, and certainly a manager that he's actually worked with before, and...
Who knows?
Did he play him? That was the question. Elliot Bennett wasn't by any means a regular at Norwich under
That's
Hughton,
because he was injured.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm not talking about the period when he was injured, though, just generally.
Yeah, I mean, Hughton didn't play him a huge amount, but that doesn't mean to say that he, you know, just because he didn't play him at Norwich doesn't mean to say he won't play him at Brighton.
No.
You know, they're different things. I mean, you're asking a question here about what we're going to expect and who we're going to get in. We just don't know, because, let's face it, we'd have had to have studied how Newcastle, Birmingham, Norwich played under Hughton beforehand in order to have any idea. And even then, we're actually, he's taken on a not particularly great Championship squad this time round. So, and it's if anything, it's actually a bigger challenge for him as well.
Well, when a manager comes in, it normally galvanises the team anyway, a bit like Nathan Jones
in the very early days. Yes,
but I mean, obviously this has an impact on other players as well in a negative way. Now, do we think we will now see the end of some players?
I don't think there's anybody that's going to leave now that wouldn't have been expected to anyway. I mean, as we've said before, I think Chris O'Grady may go back to Sheffield United, depending on how things pan out over the next couple of weeks. But I can't see there's that many else. We haven't got that many left, have we? The players that aren't playing now are mostly injured.
We also have, in having a new manager, we also have everyone, it's a clean sheet of paper again. Everyone is in a position to, you know, even the likes of Kemi Agustin, and he hasn't been playing under any managers, he has an equal chance the same as well, possibly not to the same extent that the regular first teamers have, but he has a chance to stake his claim should he wish to do so. Everyone has their... This is their opportunity to, you know, to hit the reset button.
I must admit, I had forgotten about Kemi Agustin, as I think most people have, quite gratefully, probably.
Well, you know,
although Kemi has actually had a contribution this season when he has actually played. I mean, he got injured against, I think it was against Leeds, but he played a couple of games. He was actually doing all right.
He was okay, but you know, you, with that sort of fella, you need a lot more from him. But like you say, when you're saying, if you're asking who's going to come, who's going to go, you know, is Houghton's arrival actually then going to precipitate someone leaving? You're not in a position to know, because you know, and until such time he's had 2 or 3, 4 days playing, you know, training with the players, he himself is not going to know. But everyone has a chance to prove themselves.
Okay. So he said, you mentioned, you alluded to this earlier, he says he wants to keep the same style of play that we're used to.
Well, he said not quite so expansive. I think what we mean by that is that, I mean, he's watched the Championship, and obviously he probably watched us coming up from the third division as well. And we played this big sort of booming style of, you know, long passes that were... There were passes rather than hoofs and things like that. I think when he says more compact, but not quite so expansive, I think he means just keeping it tighter. There is an element of him saying we're going to concentrate on, you know, making sure the midfield's well stocked rather than we're going to go gung-ho towards goal. But let's face it, as much as we might rate Greg Halford and much as we might rate Lewis Dunk, our defence is still found wanting. We know that actually some of that is down to a midfield that hasn't been functioning. But he's got to actually sort all of that lot out and stop us losing, as well as making sure that those defeats become draws and those draws become wins.
Yeah, I mean, Vicky, I mean, crucially, we've gone into 2015 out of the bottom three, so that makes his job a little bit easier.
I don't think it does. At the end of the day, you're still, you know, hovering around the relegation zone anyway. So he knows we need to get points. That's not going to change whether you're 20th. 21st, 22nd, is, you know, you need to get those points and start climbing up the table. So it's a nice little boost. We all know it. We all look at the table still, even though it's only January. We look at the table and think, well, where's that dotted line? And, you know, the sooner we get away from it, the better. But I don't think it's critical, particularly that we're one place above it, one place below it.
If anything, being below that line at the moment really focuses the manager. Yeah. So,
but I mean, and Vicky, another thing that before we came on air today, you mentioned to me, it's nice to be coming in on this show actually on a wave of optimism.
Well, it is, and I think people are going. Even to this cup game tomorrow, people are going up there with
today,
of course it's today, a spring in their step. You know, they're going to the game with a spring in their step. I think also partly that's because it's a cup game and it's not quite so crucial for us. It's not another game ticked off in the league campaign. If we lose it, you know, it's not the end of the world.
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, I spoke to Gary Nelson earlier today, and he has confirmed it was actually 86 players.
We're up to 86 now, yeah. Are we? Okay.
Four of them twice.
Okay, for anyone who wants to know about that reference, and let's face it, we've talked about it often enough. FA Cup first round, 87-88 season, away at Brentford, away at Griffin Park on the dilapidated terraces. Nelson picks the ball up just around on the halfway line. This is, as my memory serves, pick the ball up on the halfway line, dance through, in real life, probably about 5 or 6 players, really, gets to the edge of the area. And bearing in mind he's left-footed, I think he then switches back onto his left foot and then pings an absolute scorcher into the top corner. Having said that, you know, it doesn't hurt if it enters folklore that we're up to 86.
You see, those of you who are lucky enough to have been at that game, treasure that memory, because my folklore moments from games at Brentford surround players like Glenn Thomas and losing 4-0.
4-0
2 years in a row and swearing I'd never go again.
we do often concede heavily. In fact, actually, just thinking, away at Brentford, it was one of those 8 out of 8 in the year that we won the third division, you know, that March. And it was a pretty awful game.
That was the first time we won there since 1969, though.
So, was it really?
Yeah.
Glenn Thomas, though, he was the Colin Hawkins of his day.
We missed a penalty, and I think we won by a very sort of a lucky own goal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Ashley missed, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the...
To be fair, it was a tremendous save, I remember, actually, by, I think it was Richard Lee. I think it's still there, actually.
I'll take your word for it, but it was a horrible performance. But, you know, a win's a win, and, you know, we were... Again, it was one of those managers just bellowing at the crowd again. That was, you know, you do cherish those times, those moments when you can see what it means for the fans, But when you see what it means for the manager and the team, that, you know, it picks you up just that little bit more. And that's what I talk about, you know, with your thing at the end of the Fulham game, you know, when you got the manager and the players coming over with almost a sense of relief that, hey, we've finished the year on a little bit of a buzz.
I think it's also good for the Brentford game. It's another game that's quite close, second of three, really, isn't it?
We've got Charlton as well.
That's going to attract quite a lot of Albion supporters up there, hopefully to keep the atmosphere going, because that's one of the other things that was very noticeable on Monday night, was just the atmosphere amongst the away contingent.
Oh, the ring of fire, which had everyone bouncing constantly throughout the whole game, really.
It's not a song that's traditionally associated with us, but it contributed very, very much to the night. And it was,
it's something everyone knows. And
because there are no words.
Well, there is that, and it's also probably something you'd actually consider as part of a certain subsection of Brighton's culture, that you think of a ring of fire.
Yeah, moving on.
Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say. So we had 3,000 people up there on Monday after Christmas.
How many have we got for Brentford?
Less than about half.
It's about 1,800, I think. For Brentford,
sort of that ridiculous sort of Sabutio standards, the red version of the end at Loftus Road.
Yes,
it's that kind of
very
thing.
Very much.
But
so.
I mean, the
but withstanding.
They've got a new ground coming, haven't they?
Yes.
So you know, good on them. I look forward to, if they're going to do a pub on every corner as well, then better still. Yeah. Better still.
But I mean, the 3,000 that did travel up on Monday, they deserve. We all deserve tremendous credit, because we actually, for once, actually kept going.
Give yourself a pat on the back.
I'm going to give myself a pat. I deserved it. Trust me. But long story.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was the best atmosphere of an away game I can remember for a very, very long time.
Probably since back to your old game again. The last time we won in October.
We've played Charlton away since then.
Charlton was before, wasn't it?
I think 4-1, 4-0
up there.
The 4-0 game was followed by the Peterborough 3-0 game, wasn't it?
So, yes, that was probably, both of those games were excellent away. But again, it's another away game I missed. I didn't go to the Peterborough game, but yes, and everyone started swearing for the rest of the season.
If you're going to have three away games in a row, then Fulham, Brentford, Charlton is about as good as it's going to get for us. And so that's three games. They're going to have a lot of support there. They released another load of tickets for Charlton today, I think, as well. So
yesterday,
you know, should be
and I look forward to that.
Good support for both of them.
I'm actually going to bother my sorry backside and go to Charlton as well. So
trains are also a pain in the backside.
The trains
are also
a mess as well. But you know, this is it. We're that tenacious that we can actually just not go to London Bridge. We'll go to Victoria, and we'll go to Charlton, and we'll
hitchhike.
Draw. Yes, it's fine. But that's the point. We've got a reasonable record of a good way of following, and that I think follows on from the days of Gillingham. You know, when you traipse your godforsaken bus 75 miles there and back, sorry, there and 75 miles back, you know, and every game is effectively an away game, you kind of get used to it. So going to London is almost a present.
Well, I mean, Nathan Jones did allude to it in his interview, that like when he was asked the 3,000 Brighton supporters there, and he said, why, does that surprise you?
Yeah, exactly. But I think there is actually a nice symmetry there, because Fulham, you know, they brought down 3,000 fans, and only a month beforehand, they hadn't been to the Amex, but then we hadn't been to Craven Cottage since. I think probably the last time we were at Craven Cottage, that Putney end was one big sort of forlorn terrace. It was certainly open air.
It was 96, 97, I think it was. Yeah.
And I think that was when we marched from Victoria Station to Lancaster Gate. It was about 1,000 of us.
Don't think I was at that one. I remember being in a previous one, again, standing on the uncovered terrace. And at that time, well, it's still the case that the managers have to walk out across the away end, if you like, to where the dugout is. And at the time, it was Barry Lloyd, a big protest going on, and everyone was just shouting at Barry Lloyd, and he had to run the gauntlet, effectively.
Okay. Well, we are running out of time, so just quickly, we just want to need to move on to the January sales. So what do we need?
Well, I'll stick my neck out and suggest a striker or two.
A tall one, preferably.
Is that greedy?
Yeah.
Well, one that needs washing.
One that needs washing. Don't get it.
One that
you're alluding to Glenn Murray, I'm guessing.
I possibly might be alluding to Glenn Murray.
I would take him unwashed quite happily.
Okay.
That sounds quite bad.
That does sound, we'll move on from that one. And for the fact that there's a lot of us didn't really rate Gary Gardner, we probably do need a little bit more cover in midfield. And I think someone who is actually creative as well. Gardner did a certain job, but you know, going forward, dear God, we needed someone who could, you know, just, you know, when you got Kalunga playing that ball through to Solly March, you don't want to have to rely on Kalunga doing that. You didn't want to have to rely on Kazira. whoever, either or, but they weren't doing it often enough. Kazenga were relying on far too much for. Solly March can do it and will get better doing so.
Dale Stevens is constantly broken.
Well, quite. So I think that sort of a more creative but still strong. Can we have Andrew Cross back, please? Yeah. No, seemingly not. So
well, I mean, one thing we do need to do, Vicky, is to spend some money. We can't keep relying on having a million loan players because, I mean, that was just... Sammy's era is going to be probably remembered for the amount of loan players and the lucky dip of the best ones got to miss out this week.
I'm not questioning the professionalism of any players, but I must admit I found I was slightly uncomfortable with the notion that we were going out there with half the team as loan. Yeah, not belonging to us. And yeah, I'm not questioning their professionalism, but you do wonder sometimes, you know, if these players belong to you, they're part of the club. Are they just going to pull a little bit more for you?
Going through the motions or not?
We were mocking Watford a couple of seasons ago because they had all these loan players. It's slightly different because of the system that they operated to get those loan players. But nonetheless, it's a Watford side full of loan players. And we were quite critical of that and for good reason. And so I think, yeah.
Well, those all came from one club, to be fair. So, yeah.
A couple of them. But yeah, I think it would be nice to get some players in that were ours and had some kind of stake in Brighton and Hove Albion and wanted to play for the club and were here because they want to, not because their other club's not playing them and they can't be bothered.
This is what worries me about the prospect of Diarra coming in. Now he's going to be bloody expensive and is he might come in for the 6 months or whatever.
Because he was Sammy's man, possibly.
Well, maybe. I mean, it's the likes of him who's going to be expensive and not be committed, as Vicky's pointing out, committed to, let's face it, we are still looking at a relegation scrap.
There's talk of Sebastian Bassong. I've heard his name mentioned quite a lot from Norwich. Again, another possibly slightly mercenary player, or maybe it's unfair, but he seems to have the reputation of being slightly mercenary.
Yeah. Well, we will soon find out, because that is all we've got time for. So thank you, of course, to Alan Wears.
You're welcome.
What did Diana do? Well, she made a foil FA Cup, obviously. We'll see you next week. Thanks, bye.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring, bound by wild desire. I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. Fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. The taste of love is sweet when hearts like ours meet. I fell for you like a child.